Go ahead and hit this button and get going. I appreciate Scott. Scott's a great guy. I'm so glad that y'all are here and we're able to be together. Like you said, I'm from Nashville. I have a beautiful family back at home. They did not want to make the drive tonight because I'm driving straight back after this is over. But they've got school tomorrow and got to be up and get going. But just so you know a little bit about me, just so we can kind of become friends really quick and get jump into this together. I'm from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, originally. I grew up kind of, my dad has a farm and I grew up going on the farm, working on the farm. Every single Saturday, all the time. Went to Lipscomb University, studied graphic design and marketing, so that's kind of where my background is a little bit. But also grew up in a town where I never had, I had a phone in my house that had a cord. Remember those? And also, surprisingly, I'm not that old, but I also never grew up with a microwave. I didn't have cable television. I didn't have internet at my house or any of those things, surprisingly. And so when I got to Lipscomb in the year 2000, as a freshman, all of those things were given to me immediately at the same time, including a microwave. I had no idea how to use that. And so that kind of gave me one of those moments where I was like, okay, aluminum foil doesn't go in the microwave. Didn't know that until I got to be a freshman in college. But all of those things that were given to me, faster internet, cell phone, cable television, like all of that, wireless phones, you know, non-corded phones, all of these things were given to me at the exact same time, and I didn't know how to handle it. I wanted it all. I was like, oh, I want to watch every channel all the time. I want to surf the web. I don't need to use my encyclopedias anymore. Like, all of these different things were running through my head, and I just wanted it all the time. And so it started to kind of combat my thought process of, like, why do I want this? Like, what's causing me to want this so much that it bothered me? And so as God kind of put me into this journey of jumping into youth ministry and giving me internships and then kind of leveraging me to a position to be able to be a youth minister, all of that together just kind of put me in a place where God said, hey, I've got a plan for you now. I've got a great plan for you to experience this. Just relax, watch how it runs, and believe me, I'll take care of you. So in 2008, I was given the opportunity to speak to a VBS at my home church in Hillsboro. And our family minister just said, hey, we got a bunch of parents coming together to a VBS, and you know tech, right? And I'm like, yes, I do. And they're like, come in and just kind of share those thought processes with me, with us. And so about an hour and a half later, we walked out of that room, and everyone was just like, we want more, we want more, we don't know what we're doing. I'm like, I don't either, but let's learn together. And so from that place, God has given me the ability to go out and kind of just share this thought process. And tonight, we're just going to learn together. I mean, that's kind of the goal here. There's going to be some things that if you're in an older generation in this room, you're going to be like, I have no idea what you just said. I'm just really good at turning my computer on and off at home, and I'm okay with that. I bought a new TV. It says it's smart, but I don't know what it does, you know, but that's okay. And so all these different things. But if you're kind of figuring out, and you've got younger children and you've got maybe grandchildren, whoever it might be, there's going to be a lot of things that I hope that give you the opportunity to have a conversation. And that's the goal here, is to not eliminate everything, but to hopefully have a conversation that gives you the ability to continue that conversation so that students aren't just finding all their answers from Google. They're able to actually ask you something, and you can give answers through that. So super glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Here we go. So how many of you have ever been taught? Well, let's rewind for a second. How many of you have a cell phone? You own a personal cell phone in this room. Okay, great. What was the ages that you received your first smartphone? Just randomly. What are some over here? First smartphone. 40, 30 something. 60 plus over here, 21. Okay, that's good. It's fun to hear that the answers from the students when they'll come in here later. It's because it's very different. But how many of you actually read the instructions to your smartphone when you got it? No one, right? I don't know. I really, you did a little bit back there. Thank you for being honest. It's rare that someone's like, yeah, I read, you know, I never had one before, but once I got it, I got the instruction manual out and I read all about it. It's just, that's not what we do. It's kind of like you never really taught how to blow out a candle, right? You just kind of put, someone puts a cake in front of you and they just kind of say, oh, I don't know what to do. And you just keep going after it. And the parents are like, no. But you forget that you were never taught how to actually blow out a candle. And poor kid, I mean, he tried his best. He's like, I'm supposed to eat it, right? And so it's just kind of the way he goes. But one of the biggest rules that I want you to remember as we jump into this is to take care of your fingerprint first, okay? Because what's so easy in this moment tonight together is for you to think about somebody else and say, man, Susie needs to hear this. You know, or Johnny needs to hear this. Like all of these different thought processes go through your head, and that's not what we're here for. You've got to take care of your fingerprint first. There's a reason why you have a passcode that's either your face or your fingerprint on your phone. So take care of yourself first, and then you can start reaching out to somebody else. Reaching out, like, say, hey, this guy with a red beard came in and talked to our group just last week. I want you to hear about this. We got the recordings. I'd love to sit down and talk to you about it. There's some things I learned. And that's the goal here, is to continue the conversation and not start pointing fingers at everybody else, because it's too easy in today's world to point fingers when it comes to technology. So here's a short video. It's from the Common Sense Media, which has incredible resources. If you've ever been to that website, commonsensemedia.org or .com, you can check that out, and they have great, great resources for you. But here's a video on how technology is influencing today's families.
I wake up,
I probably check it before I take a shower.
Try and separate from it, but it's hard.
So I have two cell phones, a personal cell phone and a work cell phone.
In the situation where I lose my phone, I actually could be quite stressed out and panic.
Whenever I don't know what to do, my first instinct is to pull out my phone.
No, I wouldn't say I'm addicted to my phone. I think I just use it a little too much.
It would be kind of challenging to go for a long amount of time without my phone.
I'd say it's not too much time. I'd say it's just balanced.
I do sometimes wake up because of notifications.
I try not to sleep with my phone on the pillow next to me.
I use my phone as an alarm.
3 or 4 times a week, it will be an inconvenience that I'm woken up and I can't go back to sleep. It happened this morning.
Phone usage and screen time usage is a big problem, and it does cause a lot of fights.
Phone use doesn't really cause arguments.
They're never big arguments. They're mainly just little, scuffles.
You know, my wife will catch me and, give me that really look on her face.
I'd say more of the battles are with him getting off the phone.
I'd like to be better at that.
It's been a concern because the phone use, or device use by my son, is what everybody else is doing now. It's kind of the norm for them. We have to set boundaries. If he could, he would play it all day long, and it's not healthy.
So almost 1 in 2 parents actually feel addicted to their phone. And here's just a few more stats prime the pump a little bit, what we're going to be talking about. 45% of parents say they feel addicted to their mobile device. 1 in 4 parents argue with their kids about a mobile device every day. Think about the last time you actually looked at your own child and you said, hey, put that down. Hey, turn that off. Hey, look at me. Look up. Like, all of these statements are becoming part of our regular language on a regular basis. My wife and I were recently at a Chick-fil-A eating dinner one night, and we try our best. We are not perfect at this, but we try our best to have no phones out on the table whenever we go out to eat. And that's just a try. That's not, like I said, it's not a perfect thing. But we were sitting there, and an elderly woman came up to us, and she said, hey, I just want to say thank you. To us. And we were like, what? We have no idea what you're talking about. She said, thank you so much for not having devices for your children out right now at this dinner table. And I said, oh, okay, thanks. This is not just me patting myself on the back in the moment. I was like, I appreciate it. She goes, can you tell my husband to do that? And she pointed over her husband, and he was just sitting there on the, on his phone. And, they're probably in their late 60s, early 70s, just an older couple. But in that moment, she noticed, she made an effort. And I challenge our grandparents in here that make an effort to congratulate families if you see them. That's a rewarding time for families to receive that information. It's almost like in the, years ago, you used to say, oh, I saw them praying at dinner. Oh, thanks for praying. We're Christians too. All these different things. It's good to kind of go out and congratulate people. But if that is a challenge for you, then I just want to challenge you. Like, even the Chick-fil-A in Nashville, they give free ice cream to the families that are willing to put their phone in a box when they walk in. And it's kind of just a fun little thing that some of the restaurants are trying to do is where I live. But 29% of kids say they keep their device in bed with them at night. Now, this is becoming more and more of a thing where students are losing their ability to know how to go to sleep. They're losing their REM, their ability to actually fall asleep and stay asleep. I've worked with students for 14 years now, longer than that, full-time ministry 14 years, but probably 18 years of ministry together. But with those moments, I see students more and more say, I don't want to miss something. I've got to be connected. If my friend needs me at 1:33 a.m., I've got to be able to reach out to them. And they believe this, and they want this. And if parents aren't enforcing something that's giving them the chance to be able to be disconnected, they do not know how to be silent. They do not know how to think without having music or something in front of them, and that's creating a long-term problem. But we're not only here to talk about the problems, we're here to challenge them to say, how do I live in a healthier manner with these devices? Because these devices, with the way the world's going, aren't going anywhere. They're only going to become more and more prevalent. So this is one stat that I found to be very, very encouraging. Is eighth graders who are heavy users of social media increase their risk of depression by 27%, while those who actually play sports, go to religious services, or even do homework more than the average teen cut their risks significantly. So showing up to church events, being a part of something at your schools or in your homes, or going out as a family, doing events together, going to watch a play or a movie, or even playing video games together as a family, all of that cut down depression so rapidly. But we've got to believe that those moments, they're actually searching for, but when was the last time you asked what they wanted? We kind of just say, oh, you're occupied, I'm not going to bother you. Oh, you have a device. It's kind of like what's interesting to me is, a lot of times when an older generation will look at a younger generation and say, oh, they're on their phones all the time. They're just looking at this. And a lot of times working with teenagers, they're playing games, kind of like doing a crossword puzzle, kind of like doing a Sudoku, kind of like reading the newspaper on a Sunday morning. They're getting their news in a different way. It's not a change of how we receive our information. It's the medium in our hands that has changed, and that's it. But there are addictions to that. Like if you took the newspaper out from somebody, from your grandparents that read it every single morning and say, nope, no more newspaper, they'll be like, oh, come on, I got to know what's going on. Or you watch your news in the morning on TV. Well, we got to see what traffic is going on. What's the weather? We watch those things as routines. These are their routines a lot of times, but we don't view it as what we think the routine should be. And that can become a dangerous game sometimes. So here's a way to evaluate social media. Things to keep in mind. For students and for adults, recognize whether or not your social accounts, whether you have a Facebook or a Twitter or an Instagram or a Snapchat or a TikTok or a Vine, whatever you have, are they public or private? Because that's a big question. And so I challenge students to say, keep it private until you're 18. And if you're 18 or older, I hope that you're not posting anything that someone else would want to steal. Because it's not necessary. Now that's harder sometimes depending on your gender. That's harder sometimes depending on what you're posting. But we challenge students to say, if you're 18 and older, it should be something that's glorifying God. Not like just Bible verses in nice sunlight, but you know, good things that's honoring what God has given you to do. How far is your digital reach? That's important too. Just because you know your children or grandchildren's friends doesn't mean you know your children's or grandchildren's digital friends. They might know somebody that's on the other side of the world that they are connecting with every single day, and they consider them friends. Remember long-distance phone bills? That's gone. There's no such thing as that anymore. A lot of times we think, oh, we can't be friends with somebody in another time zone or another country or another state. That's more possible in today's world to connect with that. And the advantages of that is we are able to connect with family members more often. I mean, FaceTime is a beautiful thing. I love seeing my kids' face light up when they connect with my mom and dad. We live 45 minutes apart, but the reality is she'll FaceTime us and they'll be like, hey, Grammy, hey, Papa Joe. You know, all these different things will pop up and it gives them the ability. One of my good friends, his mother was going through a very tough cancer, just trying to figure out the right solution. So she physically was not able to be at the birth of her fourth granddaughter. And so they FaceTimed her in, and it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. So technology is giving us advancements, but we've got to realize, are we using it to its full potential? What God could use it for, but we think it's too negative to even attempt sometimes. Number three, and why do you post what you post? This is a weird question to ask students, especially teenagers. Why do you post what you post? And they don't know. They're like, I don't know. I just do. I took a picture and I hit send. I mean, that's kind of how I did it. And to a lot of us, you're like, well, did you look at it? Did you proofread it? I mean, is it something that is beneficial to the culture that we live in or the world that we live in? And a lot of times, that's just how they communicate. I mean, Snapchat is if you don't know what Snapchat is, we can explain it later. But it's a way to connect in real time and not having to have to save all these pictures on your phone and lose the ability to have a space, gigs or megabytes or whatever you want to call it on your phone. So that's kind of the evaluation that we like to help students understand. But the thing is, how you describe technology actually does matter. If you think about it this way, let's say you're trying to reach somebody and help them understand who God is, and they've had a crummy, terrible year. They had, you know, they've lost their job, they're going through some family problems, they've had some, you know, health scares, all these different things, and you're trying to share who God is to them. And they're like, oh, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you love your God, but I'm not sure I really know who he is. I mean, why would all this bad stuff happen to me if that God really loved me the way you say he does? And how you describe God in that moment absolutely matters. I'm not saying technology is near to God at all, but I'm saying how you describe technology to a teenager actually matters. If you constantly just say, it's from the devil, it's awful, everything's bad, nothing is good on there, you can say that about just about anything. You could say Publix is awful for some reason, you know? You could say, you know, a restaurant is awful. You could say, you know, a sports team is awful. We all talk about sports in a negative way sometimes. We love this team but hate this team. Like, the way that we talk about those things matters. So if we constantly just have our angle as negative when it comes to anything technology, then they think they're doing something wrong all the time. They get their phone out and they're like, oh, my parents hate this. I just can't find a way to be a light in a dark place. I want to do good, but you know, the pressure of the world and the pressure of my friends just continually, you know, pulls at me, and I'm not going to always make the right decision. No, they're not. And neither are we. None of us in this room are perfect, and we don't have the best plan for all of this, but it is very encouraging for us to kind of go at an angle and say, how can I be a light in these places that we consider to be dark sometimes? So here's just an image of, honestly, a lot of times we think, well, my son or my daughter, they actually learn all of their cell phone habits completely from their friends because their friends are on it all the time, which is actually a lie. A family's media choices influences a child's media habits, believe it or not. If you think that your dinner table at your house is cell phone free 100% of the time, I would be surprised. Because a lot of times the habits of today's teenagers are actually learned from their moms and dads, from their families, from their extended families, whoever it might be, because we want it. We desire it. We excuse it sometimes and say, oh, this is work. This is work. I got to be on this. But if we're not willing to turn it off, if we're not willing to have a space to say this is our cell phone or our device charging station, everyone included, even mom and dad, like it's your connection piece. You don't want to miss out on something. You have that FOMO of like, well, they're doing this and I want to do that too. Their life is so good on Instagram. You know, it just looks so good. And it's not. I mean, they always post the most beautiful filtered versions of their life, and it's not really who they are. And so this is a challenge for us to understand that our habits at home are actually developing our children's next habits when they become parents one day, hopefully. And here, and another, this is a hard one. Technology is not a full-time babysitter. It's actually been researched to say, and this is hard because I'm guilty of this. Like I said, I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I didn't do a good job at this when they were younger. But if you are 2 years or younger, they say that it's not good to put a screen in front of them. And that's hard because some moms and dads are like, but it's impossible. Like, I don't know how to do it anymore. But it is. Like, a lot of us survived. If any of us in here were born between 1998 and before, which I think's a lot of us in this room, we survived, right? We're here. We're still alive. But the reality is we excuse it because everyone else is doing it. We start to compare ourselves saying, well, they're doing it. They're doing it. They're still okay. You know, all these different things. Then we justify it in other ways. Now, there are some healthy things out there. There's some healthy apps to be able to teach and learn, but not just scrolling through YouTube or scrolling through whatever it might be to find, you know, whatever is entertaining them. It's not always the best answer. And here's just a side rule of thumb. If you ever want to find a really good babysitter, look at their phone and just see if it's cracked. And the reason why I say that is because if they can't hold their phone, you don't want them holding your child, do you? I mean, it's just one of those things where you're like, oh, well, you can't hold on to that, so I'm just going to keep my kid over here. But it's just one of those things, taking care of something. Give, you know, and sometimes I always tell parents, if you want your child to learn how to have responsibility with these type of things, actually give it to them a year before you said you would, to say, hey, we're just going to test this. We're going to see if you can handle it. We're not going to give you full, you know, rights on the whole thing, but we're going to see if you can actually not break it for the first time. And if you don't break it, then we'll you know, reconvene and figure out what it is we need to do next year when you actually get a device that might be more unlocked for you. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to jump through a few of these things. This is the main social media out there right now. For those that don't understand all of this, I'll do a quick breakdown in a second. But we got Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, and TikTok. And we'll tell you what it is in just a second. But social media, this is the timeline of when they were released. February of 2004, Facebook was hot off the scene. It was actually created just for college students back in the day, and then it kind of leaked out, and everybody wants to be a part of it. The fastest growing social media right now is Facebook, based on those that are, I think, 45 years and older. Students are like, yeah, I have a Facebook, but I'm never on it anymore. So if you want to connect with your kids, that's not the place for it. YouTube is actually surprisingly growing really fast right now. YouTube TV is huge. It's kind of one of those cable cutter opportunities. You still have to pay for it. Facebook still is free. And then March 2006, Twitter came out. And Twitter is just a short amount of words, of characters, that now has been extended to kind of microblogging. And so you're allowed to say something and post something out there for a lot of people to see and retweet. You might be more familiar with the President of the United States tweeting a lot. And that's the most political I'll ever get in these things. But all of these people are using this as a platform to be able to reach so many people. It's huge in the working world right now. Everybody wants to be a part of whatever it is being said out there, and retweets are like dollars to them. So October 2010, Instagram came out. Instagram basically took all of the creative parts of Twitter and formed it into a similar pattern, but it's just pictures with a small tagline. Now it can be as long as you want it to be, but Instagram is owned by Facebook, same company. They bought it, and so Instagram is now, if you look at the bylines and all that stuff, it says Facebook, a property of Facebook. And so that's how that was created. Snapchat came out, and it was sneaky when it came out. If you know anything about Snapchat, it used to be one of the sneakiest platforms out there for social media. But Snapchat is basically an ability to take a picture. You can put text on it if you want to. You can put, you know, all these different animojis or GIFs or whatever you want to all over it and make yourself look pretty. And you can put a squirrel running around your head, you know, all these different things, whatever you want. It's all fake. And you send it to somebody. And you decide whether or not that they can see it for 1 second or 10 seconds. And then eventually they added the infinity symbol, which means you can view it as long as you want until you click the button and then it's gone. But it's all gone. And then you can post to a story, which is only available to be seen for 24 hours. That's it. It actually starts counting down after the 24 hours is over. It's deleted forever. So the tracking of Snapchat is very, very difficult. And for grandparents that want to see their kids and see what they're up to, you got 24 hours. It's like, oh, great. I got it. Whoa, I didn't even know it was out there. And so all these different things happen through that. And what's hard about it is it became a lot of bullying. A lot of what we call sexting, and a lot of different things that what people are trying to do is to tease somebody. A girl, to get the attention of a boy, will send a 1 second picture and say, look at me, and then it's gone forever. But the creators of Snapchat actually said, this is in their fine print, we cannot guarantee that every image sent through Snapchat is permanently deleted. And that scares students, Because what actually happens, if you know anything about technology, the picture is taken with a phone, and then it's sent up to what we call the World Wide Web, up into the satellites, all those. It goes straight to Snapchat servers in an undisclosed location, into their servers, and then back up to the World Wide Web, and then goes out to wherever that other person is receiving it, and then they see it, and then it's gone. And if you're trying to entice somebody else, they say, we want more, send more, what is this, please, question mark, all this stuff. And it starts to kind of mess with the mind. Well, I wanted that, but what can I do? And they start challenging themselves. And a lot of times, in my observation, when girls take a picture of themselves to try to reach the attention of a guy's eyes, it's not just one picture. They might take 60 before they figure out that's the one they like. And then they start sending these out. And it can be very, very dangerous. Snapchat is actually on a little bit of a plateau. It's not rising right now, which is good, because TikTok is taking over. And so TikTok came out in September 2016. And it is basically, it's the number one entertainment app out right now. They do not consider themselves to be social media at all. It is completely entertainment, and what their goal is to put creative videos out there. But the thing is, there's zero monitoring on there. It's explicit, sexually explicit. It's profanity. It's all the above. But people are actually trying to use it as a platform more, and there is more that's being put out there that's good on it. But it started out so bad that it's kind of like Snapchat back in the day. Snapchat was so bad when it came out that people were like, come on, we've got to get people's attention on the other things, the good things of this world. And that's kind of where TikTok is right now. So here's just some stats for those. Facebook reaches 60.6% of internet users. That's in the entire world. 90% of 18 to 44-year-olds access YouTube on a daily basis. And then Twitter consists of 34% female and 66% male. And then 4.2 billion likes are liked per day on Instagram. That's a lot of, like, just, you know, double tapping, finger tapping on a screen. Snapchat users spend 26 minutes on it per day. And then 41% of TikTok users are the ages of 16 to 24. So the goal behind all this is not just to scare you. This is just to inform you. And the goal behind this is to help you practice more limitations, not just eliminations. So here's the thing. If you ever meet somebody that's addicted to something, what do? You just say, hey, stop. And just say, let me just take all the things you're addicted to out. Let me just get them out of your life. I mean, some people, the cold turkey is almost impossible. And the reality is, when you have a child from a very young age, growing up through mature, you know, the adolescent days to puberty days, their mind is developing. They don't know how to live life outside of having a phone in their back pocket or their purse or whatever it might be. All of that is developing who they are. We all, thankfully, were able to graduate life before our brains develop all the way up until we're 25. So we were able to graduate through life before we got this technology. These students aren't. They're constantly being fed. They are the guinea pig generation of technology. I mean, the researchers of this stuff, like Snapchat and Instagram, they're just making money all the time. I mean, that's their goal it's free. I mean, you don't have to pay for it. That's why even parents are like, yeah, sure, it's free. Sign up. We'll see how it goes. And that's how we all are just kind of experiencing it. So we have to practice how to limit these things a little bit more than just eliminating. Because if you take a 17-year-old student and you say, hey, I'm taking that. That's mine. You're not going to get it back for like 3 weeks. They are destroyed because that's their lifeline. That's their friendship sometimes, surprisingly. It's hard for our brains to justify that and comprehend that, but that's the reality of living in 2020 and being a teenager. It's hard to grasp. But that's how they connect with everybody. So just kind of be aware of that. So here's some things I would love for you to be aware of at home. These are just some options that you can use at home. Number one is Circle. And that's the wrong screenshot for that one, so ignore the one on the right. But number one is Circle, and it's to manage your family's internet connected to devices and filters. And it's basically both of those are actually incorrect. I apologize for that. But Circle, it connects to your Wi-Fi and it allows you to kind of watch everything. So if you're a techie person, it's a little white box that connects to your router through a Cat 5 or Cat 6 cable. And then with that, it kind of monitors everything in your house, and you can set limitations for every single device, including your smart refrigerator, if you have one of those. Like, every device can have limitations through that, and it's a one-time fee, and then I think they now have a yearly subscription to that to kind of have more access to different things. Amplify is it another type of router in your house that you're able to kind of go through. It's more robust. It kind of actually serves as the router itself. The Circle is actually connected to your router to be able to kind of have that connection piece to kind of disrupt what's coming in and what's going out. But Amplify is one that is an in-home Wi-Fi router that keeps track of devices and protects your network. The cool thing about the Amplify one is I can connect to it on my phone right now, and I can just shut down the internet at my house if I wanted to and say, oh, sorry, it messed up. I apologize. So that's how that one goes. On the go, these, like I said, ignore the screenshots on there, but RPACT is a great app. This one actually is that one. These are correct, actually. RPACT is a screen time parental control app, and it's a GPS locator. I think that's just an app that you can download on your phone, as well as Moment. Moment actually helps you to decrease the amount of times that you look at your phone. So before Apple released screen time settings, it actually shows you how many times you raise your phone or tap the screen to actually say, what time is it? And so all of those things, it keeps track of all of that stuff. And both of these are free, which is nice as well. The GPS location thing, some students are like, my parents, I mean, they know everything about me. And if you don't want to be able to do that, I actually had lunch with one of our senior students today, and he said, what do you plan to do when your kids are older? And I was like, I'm probably just going to use, like, Find My Friends or Find My on the iPhones and all that stuff so I can know where they've been. Well, these apps actually tell you how fast they were going, if they didn't stop at a stop sign, where they went, the route they went there. Like, it can be very Apache helicopter style parenting, you know? But the reality is, some of them, that's what some parents want. And I'm like, okay, that's you do what you need to do in that situation. But I've got endless stories on how parents react on keeping track of their own kids. Do what? Right, that's correct. Yes, you definitely are. You definitely are. But I just try to go with the free ones a little bit more than the ones that cost a lot of money, because the other ones do cost money to know how fast they're traveling in their cars and all that stuff. And then the last one is Screen Time. This is the easiest way without having to deal with apps. A lot of this can be very confusing, and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about, and that's okay. But this one is built into the phone for Apple products. I'm sorry, but I have never owned anything Windows in my entire life. I am strictly Apple, and that probably turned a lot of ears off if you are a Windows person in the room, and I apologize. I think Windows are great to look through, and that's about it. So, but you just tap your settings, go to Screen Time and Content, and then make sure to enable the content and privacy restrictions. But just remember that you create that passcode, because if you tell your kids, then they can just bypass it anytime they want. And what's interesting is, if you lose that passcode, you have to wipe the whole phone if you haven't backed it up at all. So be very careful that you put that in a place that you know where it's at, and your children do not know where it's at. That's the easiest way to kind of keep screen time aware from that. I've got another video, but we're going to skip it really quick. And we're going to move on to this. So these are some apps to be aware of. Like we talked about it just a minute ago, TikTok is my number one app to be aware of right now. It's an entertainment app of mobile looping videos that claim to be authentic and real. Some of them are really funny. Is anyone in here have a TikTok account? Anybody? Nobody? Okay. I'm the only one. All right. So what I usually do as a youth minister and as a husband and as a father is if there is a new app out there, I try to download it with my wife so that, you know, there's not something that we're like, oh no, what did you just see? What are you watching? Are you watching that? We try to watch things together. And that just kind of helps us kind of be accountable to each other and be able to say, all right, you know, we'll watch that or do that. And we'll, communicate to each other through Snapchat occasionally just for fun. But this is one of those that has a lot out there. It's still pretty new, but it does say that it is 12 plus. So just keep that in mind. The mature content, you have to go in and do some privacy settings on there and change it to private completely if your kids do want a TikTok account. WhatsApp is actually a good app to have if you have like traveling overseas or anything like that. It allows you to text and phone call and do all that just through Wi-Fi. so you don't have to pay all the foreign fees and all that stuff. But what students use it for is it's free messaging app designed to use Wi-Fi without having to actually use your cell phone number. So they have an account through that, and they can message people separately from what you might be monitoring on their phone. So just kind of be aware of how that works. These are brand new. Y'all are the first group to hear about this. This is a new 2020 stuff. But Hoop is a brand new app, and it is on the rise super, super fast. It connects to your Snapchat account, and it basically, if you've ever heard of Tinder, it's a kind of a dating app. This allows you to swipe left or swipe right whether or not you like them based on their picture. And then it doesn't give you their Snap information, their Snapchat information. It gives you just you like them. Now this is where they're located. Do you want to hook up? Do you want to hang out? Do you want to do this? And that just connects with them just through that app. It's an add-on to the app of Snapchat. YOLO is a spontaneous way to receive honest messages from anonymous people. It's the scariest thing ever. But yeah, it's just one of those things you're looking at a 13-year-old, like, what are you looking for on here? And you just allow yourself to put a picture of yourself and you say, ask me anything. And it's anonymous people. I mean, they could be predators. They could be, a 9-year-old. They could be anybody just out there and just say, send me something honest. And what they claim on there is that it's just honest feedback. Well, it's just a stage for bullying to happen. Like, oh, you're gross, you're ugly, whatever you want to say. And they just receive this constantly, all the time. And we have a few students, and it's mostly girls that are in the YOLO app. I don't know a lot of guys that are in that app, but it's just they're searching to be identified by something. They're searching for that the self-esteem that they think they've lost. They try to find it in so many other things, and they tend to lose the identity of who Christ made them to be and who God is making them to become. And they don't trust that anymore. They validate their life completely based on how other people perceive them and what they want them to be. And they're just trying to live a kind of like this puppeteer life of who they think that their friends want them to be. So it's difficult. But here are a couple of apps, a couple more apps to be aware of. Tinder, it's the world's most popular app for meeting new people and to help you live in the now is what it says. Tinder is 17 plus, but you can lie about your age and get on it if you need to. That's what students do sometimes, but it is literally kind of what they call the hookup culture. They recognize in a proximity where you're located, and you can find somebody within certain miles of where you live, and then they can invite them over to your house, or you can go to their house, whatever it might be. But it can be pretty scary. If you're in your 20s, a lot of people get on that to be able to meet people to go on dates. And Secret Calculator is the last one. It looks and actually acts completely like a calculator. But the reality is you type in a code on the calculator and it flips the screen over into a secret portal on your phone that hides pictures and videos that you don't want anyone else to see. And so that's how that works. And so even if you see the calculator on there, like, oh, they just have a calculator as their most used app, they must be doing really good in math, And you're like, no, actually they're not. So that's going back to the screen time settings. A lot of us, this can feel very overwhelming, but I encourage you to don't be afraid to Google, like, how do I set up screen time? Go to some of the websites that I'll be showing in a second and just look on those areas. Don't be afraid to ask somebody, like, find a trusted friend. Like, we have parents that come to me with devices and say, Joseph, just look through this, please. I don't know what I'm doing. And I just kind of scroll through it and say, yeah, everything's okay. Or, oh, this is a night that they were, felt very disconnected, and this is what they dove into, and just try to help people out. And give people room to mess up sometimes. We can't expect perfection in this world because none of us are either. But the reality is just kind of giving them room to be able to say, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. Can you help me out through this? Because they're looking to be validated. The students are looking to be validated through these type of things. Something coming up soon. Apple just released this. Communication limits. You can actually set up on your device. Choose who your children can communicate with throughout the day. And during downtime. So for my phone, for my screen time, I personally have it going off, I believe it's 11 p.m. to 7:30 a.m. My phone is, you cannot contact me unless you're in my favorites. And my favorites mean that they can still call and text and it'll still pop up. But everything else is, all notifications are silenced. And I don't have anything else that works on my phone. And if I want to get on it, I have to enter in a code to be able to get in again. But that's just a kind of a spiritual discipline for myself to be able to practice that on a regular basis. And that keeps me to say at nighttime, it's bedtime. It's time to go to sleep. But this kind of keeps your children to be able to know who they're communicating with, who they can't communicate with. So you have somebody bullying them, you can block their number, and their number cannot get to their phone, which is incredible. And this has all been done in the past research of all the cyberbullying and things like that. So here's a few things that I want you to be aware of before we kind of finish up here in the next few minutes. But here's how tech can hurt students. Technology for students, they notice posts more than verbal communications. They're going to see something that's posted out there to the world before you might say it to them 12 times. Did you see that? Or did you hear about that? And they're like, I don't know what they're talking about. And then they see it and they're like, did you see this? And they're like, oh, I just told you that. Like they see these things, so they live in a very visual world. And they choose a screen over face-to-face conversation. When I walk into our youth center, I walk in and it's just silent in there sometimes. And I'm like, is anybody in there? And then they're all just kind of sitting down and playing games or doing whatever. Like, hey, what's up? How's it going? And they're like, hey, you know, just kind of go back and forth. And we might see that at home sometimes. We might see it from point A to point B in the car when they, you know, put on the headphones or listen to whatever it might be. These are all challenging moments. We don't expect perfection, but we do challenge you to say, how do I engage in conversation with a 14-year-old girl that's my daughter, and we just go from school to home? What do I talk about? If you don't know, ask somebody. Try to be creative. And there's so many ways to use technology to be creative on communication. We couldn't get our kids to take a bath when they were little. We're like, what can we do? And we talked to one of our friends, and she came up. She goes, put a little dot of food coloring in there. We're like, ooh. And now we're taking red baths. And we're like, red bath time. They're like, yeah. And they love it. And they come running. And it's just one dot. It's not going to, you know, stain their skin or anything. But it's just one of those things that we change bath time forever based on a little thing of food coloring. So try to be creative in the way that you communicate with these children, because we're used to what is in the back of our brain as memory. Oh, how was your day? Good. Okay, good. Did you do anything good today? Yes. Okay. And you just kind of go back and you're like, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. And you feel beat up because all you want to do is talk to your own children. My son this year, they have a word cemetery in their class. I think this is the most creative thing I've heard in a long time. They have a word cemetery, and he's in third grade. And they actually put a word up on the wall, and it says, you're no longer allowed to say this word. And one of the words was good. He couldn't say it. It was a rule in his class. And it gave him seven other words that he could use in place of good. And I was like, that's incredible. So I would say, hey, Nolan, how was your day? And he's like, fantastic. You know, like kind of like all these other words. I was like, oh, it was fantastic. Tell me more. I want to know more. But he couldn't use good. And so maybe you have a word cemetery at your house that you just kind of put up these words and just say, hey, no, we can't use that word. And everyone gets in trouble. Even mom and dad get in trouble if we use these words. Just kind of try to be creative in the ways that you parent today's children, because they've seen a lot more than we saw when we were their age. FOMO, fear of missing out. They really do experience this. They're like, oh, I don't know. Everyone else was there. I wasn't there. They just feel really confused about that. Social stories can misrepresent the invitation. This happens a lot in youth ministry. After class will be over, a bunch of students will go to Sonic, and they'll just get something like a milkshake or something, and I'll just go there on accident. I'm like, hey, I kind of feel like a milkshake. And I go there, and they take a picture with me while I'm there, and they put it on their story. And then the kid that didn't get invited is like, oh, Joseph took all the kids but my children. And I have a parent meeting. The parents are like, well, why did all of them get to go and not my kid? And I'm like, I was just getting a milkshake. Like, I wasn't even, that was not an invitation thing, but it's a misrepresentation of what invitation is through social stories. And that's hard, because they're seeing these things. They think everyone was invited. And that's your challenge to say, everyone? It's okay. We'll go get our own milkshake, or, you know, we'll figure out a time where you invite your friends and we'll go out and do this, whatever it might be. Don't misinterpret how that looks in those moments. An unhealthy amount of visual comparison. We all are guilty of this, but the reality is we see the best version of everybody else. And this is hard. Guys and girls struggle big time with this. They see the stuff they have. They see what they drive. They see what they wear. They see the makeup they put on. They see whatever it might be. They constantly compare and compare and compare and compare and compare, which causes their life to seem as if it's not worth living anymore. And that's when depression and anxiety, when anxiety takes the will of your life and says, I'm going to start directing you where you go. Anxiety is not a bad thing. We all have it. But when it takes the will of your life and says, I'm going to lead you in this direction, that's when it can become dangerous. And you've got to be very careful in those scenarios. But a healthy amount of visual comparison and mature content flooding an immature mind. Like I said earlier, our brains are constantly being developed all the way up until 25 years old. And a lot of our children, some of our grandchildren, they are having mature content being reached to them and they don't know how to process it. They don't know how to handle it. They don't know what that word was. They don't know what that scene was in that movie. They don't know why. What was that? Was that real? Because today's technology in movies makes it look real as possible. And they get misinterpret definitions of certain things that we know to be not that. And that's tough because that's the way that they are receiving mature content if it wasn't communicated at home. So here's some ways that technology can help students. It keeps them connected. It does actually give them a chance to stay connected through stories, through texting. It gives them a memory maker. I mean, these students are growing up where they have almost every day of their life recorded some way, somehow, which is some people are like, I don't like that. But some people are like, oh, that's kind of cool. I never knew that. It kind of gives them a chance to be able to show where they've been and where they're going. Visual learning, just like what we're doing right now, presentation teaching, create community through group messages. One of the things that we do is we try to connect grades through a thing called GroupMe. It's an app that allows us to stay connected with our juniors and seniors, our freshmen and sophomores, and just keeps them connected to ask questions, to be open, prayer requests, whatever it might be. And an emergency line. This is one of the things that a lot of people, it's the reason why you buy the phone. You want to have an emergency line. You want to keep them connected and say, if something happens, don't be afraid to call or text me. And we say that all the time, but they don't always do that. And then digital tracking shows where you are. This may seem weird to some people, but some people like to know that someone's kind of watching over them. They forget that God's actually like in control and watching over all of us, but they actually look at it and say, oh yeah, you know, mom's always looking at where I'm at. You know, I can't go this place or this place. And it teaches some discipline through that. So here's my ABCs when it comes to technology. A is this, be very aware. 1 Peter 5:8 says, be alert and of sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. So be aware. Be aware of these things. As parents, as grandparents, be aware of what's going on. Don't just say, ignorance is bliss, and just move on and just keep smiling. You know, whatever it might be aware of what's going on. If you're not afraid to talk to your children and say, this is a great icebreaker question when it comes to technology, just go up to them and like, hey, I'm thinking about getting a Snapchat. What do you think? They'll have something to say. Believe me. Like, they'll be like, oh, okay, you are. Okay, why? You know, it's like all these questions come up, and then you just kind of put that out there. Or, you know, I've seen some 40-plusers on TikTok. Do you think I should get on TikTok? And then they're like, no. And they have comments to that, and that's a great starter to these conversations. But just be aware of the changes. It's hard to keep up, believe me, because it changes rapidly. And there's some things that are coming out. You know, there was an app called Vero, and it was the next social media, and it died. It didn't happen. And so we talked about that for a little bit, but then it hasn't gone anywhere. So just kind of be aware there are some things that have really fast-paced fads, and then they kind of die out. But just kind of be aware of those type of things. Number two, set limits. Hebrews 12:11, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. One of my favorite verses in the Bible, because this is one of those moments where if you don't believe that if you set limitations more than eliminations, this is one of those discipline moments. This is a moment for you to be able to say, all right, together as a family, we're going to try to do our best here. We're not going to be perfect, but we're going to do our best to try to live up to these rules. And honestly, what I have experienced is if you help your children write the rules, they follow them longer. But don't just write the rules and say, here they are, sign the contract. Because we all sign a contract to our cell phone packages, our Comcast bills, or whatever we have for internet and all those different things. But if you write a contract with your kids and say, hey, we're going to follow this as a family, help them sit at the table, pull up a seat for them and say, let's write some rules for our family. We all need to do a better job at this. What rules do you think we should try to follow together? I promise you, they're going to follow them longer and might listen a little bit more out of those things. And last but not least, set aside. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. These are moments where you turn everything off. Whether you're going on a trip or whether you're going just out to eat, find pockets of moments of solidarity. Find pockets of moments where you can say, hey, all of us are kind of have a little bit of time off in this moment, and just practice that as a family. Whether it's you know, an hour here or whether it's 30 minutes here, but just practice those moments that you set aside and say, hey, we're not gonna actually have anything today, but we're all gonna practice this together. So let's see how it goes from there. So hopefully those are some great little ABCs for you. I think, what time do they come up here next? Are they here? Okay. So that's it. That's all we got. We'll reconvene after we're done. Thank you for listening. Y'all been a great audience. We'll come back and have fun at the end all together. I hope y'all have a great rest of the night.
Tim Yeager.
Tony?
No, Tim.
Oh, Tim. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Luke? I'm Joseph. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Well, before you leave, I know you have to go tonight, we'll give you some information about what that is.
Okay.
Social network for Creative Real Bible School.
Oh, cool.
So a social network for, a social network for spiritual growth.
Oh, cool.
So, anyway, I'll show it to you. We've had, do you know Chad Landman?
I do not.
You know, he does something similar to you. We had a retreat last year. Here's your finger.
I said,
so bad. You think that hurts? Imagine if you're looking at me.
Thank you.